Welcome to the USCA official podcast, and this is a slightly different episode for you listeners. So a little bit earlier on this year, at what should have been the start of the season, we made you a very special episode that was all about planning your season, things to take into account, and things to think of as you go through the season with different aims in mind. We had Will Coleman on the show, we had Spike the Vet, who is a vet in the UK, alongside myself and Derm. But obviously, COVID hit, and it meant that we weren't able to release the episode as we had planned. However, now things are getting going again. We actually thought there is a lot of good advice in this show. So here it is. We hope you enjoy it. Do bear in mind that it was recorded in early March, so it might sound a little bit out of date, but hopefully there is still plenty for you to take from it. And we really hope you enjoy. And we hope that you are enjoying getting back out and competing safely with your horses as well. So we'll let you relax and enjoy this latest episode of the USCA official podcast. Now, welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 253. And this episode, listeners, is all about planning your season. So whether you have one horse that you compete at a lower level, whether you've got a team of horses, hopefully there is going to be some useful tips and tricks in this episode that will help you with your season planning. And we're going to have a couple of very special guests. First off, we're going to welcome Will Coleman, who is a top level international rider who has been riding at the highest level for a good number of years now, and who is very, very good, which is why we wanted to particularly talk to him about targeting his team of horses at certain events and planning their seasons accordingly. So, Will, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nicole.
We're delighted to have you on because, as I say, this is a really, really important topic, and I can actually feel a little bit daunting. You know, you get to the beginning of the season and you've got all of these lovely events to go to, and you've got a horse ready to go or horses ready to go, and you don't actually know where to start. So what is the process that you take? Obviously, you've got a team of horses at all different levels, but how do you plan your season first off?
Well, it's a process. It's never like you sit down for an hour and, you know, done and dusted. It always kind of evolves over a period of weeks. We usually start thinking about it kind of even November, December of the previous year, you know, for the spring of you know, this year. So it's definitely something that we commit a lot of mental brain power to. But I usually start first and foremost with what my major season goal is. So like if it's in the spring, the horse gearing for Kentucky or an overseas event or Bromont or Jersey Fresh or something like that, then I usually start there and then always work backwards based on what I think those horses need in terms of preparation. And every horse is a little different. Some horses prefer runs, I think, or perform better when the runs are put a little bit closer to one another. And some horses do a lot better when the runs are much more spaced out. I personally would probably tend to err on the side of spacing the runs out quite a bit. That doesn't bother me at all. I don't think the horses forget how to go cross country if they don't run for 5 weeks. But I think it all depends on the animal and kind of what they need in all three phases, not just on, as it relates to the cross country. So it definitely is something that takes me a while. Like I would sit down with Katie and even my head girls and just look at the season and look at the horses and really, I usually have for each horse three or four plans. And then as I get closer and closer to the first events of the season, I might pick which plan I feel like is the best for that horse this year.
I think that's really interesting, actually, going almost looking at what the bigger picture aim is. So having that aim and then saying, right, how am I going to get to that point? I think that having two or three plans probably sums up horses in general, doesn't it? Because you have plan A and then plan B comes into play and then you think about plan C. You've got to be fluid with it, haven't you? Well, you have plan A and that might be your preferred option. It might not happen.
Exactly. You've got to have a plan, but you've got to be flexible. I mean, they're not machines and, you know, sometimes they might be telling you that they need another week between events or the nice thing now is that spring calendar, particularly here on the East Coast, is so full that you've got a lot of options. run might present, you know, kind of particular challenges or particular kind of advantages of being used as a run with horses, but you've got options. So I think you can really now think about your plans pretty individually for the horses. I think that's a huge thing.
I think that's a valid point in itself. You say each run can give a really valid advantage to a particular horse. Is that something that you bear in mind when you pick your events as the ones that you want to go to, whether it might be big atmosphere, maybe they have a particularly tough show jumping track that you're aware of that actually think, yeah, do you know what, Mike, that's really going to suit my horse. You know, my horse loves big hills on the cross country. I'm going to go there because of that. Is that something very much that you think, right, I'm going to tailor my horse's plan to their needs? It's not going to be necessarily where I want to go. It's going to be where's best for them and where is going to suit them.
1,000%. Yeah. And then I think it's, you think about that as it relates to all three phases, right? Like, you know, there aren't a lot of big crowds at many events on the cross country in the U.S., but there's events like Red Hills where there is a legitimate crowd factor on the cross country. There's a legitimate atmosphere at events like Carolina and the Fork. Carolina also has a pretty massive crowd for the cross country, and they add another element to those events that I think can be good both for developing horses and for experienced horses that you're just trying to get back into that frame of mind as they maybe get ready to go to an event like Kentucky where there's going to be 60,000 people there. But it's very much individualized. And sometimes, you know, I think there are certain horses that actually, even if they are gearing up for a big event, they might benefit from not going to a lot of events where they might be overstimulated in terms of atmosphere or things like that. If you can take them through their season and just keep them very relaxed, maybe even in some cases heading into a big event, I often will drop a horse down a level and just give them something a bit easier to keep them really confident and keep them feeling good. And I think there's a tendency sometimes in America to feel like you have to go to the well every month or every time out to really make sure you and the horses are ready. But sometimes the horses actually do better if you just trust that they know their job and, you know, kind of go out there and just give them a run without feeling like you have to necessarily push them to their limit, or we don't try to ask all the hardest questions you know how to ask. So that all depends on the horse. You know, there's that horse that I took to Fair Hill in the fall, Don Dante. That was his first four long, but his last run before that was a intermediate at Morton Park. And the horse went fabulously up the cross country. But his personality is such that he gets almost trying too hard. And I think it was actually beneficial for him to go to an event and just feel like it was easy. Then there are other horses that I think benefit from the challenge. Off the Record would be one of those, or maybe even Tight Lines. But by and large, you just look at each horse and what their personalities and tendencies are, and then I think you try to craft a plan working backwards from, you know, their main goal.
I think that's something that is going to come through a little bit later from the veterinary perspective of knowing your horse, knowing what suits them, knowing what makes them tick, and what is normal for them, so that you can sort of build that into their competition schedule. You kind of touched upon it there, stepping up a level and perhaps giving a horse an easier run before they do go to a big target. Would that be, I mean, I think, listeners, we're going to do a whole show actually on when is the right time to step up a level. So we're only going to scratch the surface here, Will. But stepping up, obviously massively important, is a big deal. It, you know, a lot of people put a lot of time, thought into how they're going to do that. How do you decide when your horse is ready to step up and sort of make those decisions as part of your season as it goes along? Do you know, would you do it earlier than you thought you would or later? How does that work from your perspective?
Well, to be honest, I probably base only I would base that decision only partially on maybe the level they're competing at. I would probably put a lot of stock into how the horses are training and how they are handling the material that they're going to be tested on when they go to an event at a higher level. So, you know, I think it's probably a little foolish to think that you're going to have your best work at an event. You know, you always, I think, you know, get kind of on your best days, kind of 75 or 80% of what you're getting at home. So if you're working at home at a certain level, I think it's unrealistic to think that that level is going to go up at the event. So how they're handling the training and the material is really a big part of what goes into that decision. Because if they're comfortable doing it and relaxed, and if you can go to an event and then maintain that kind of relaxed approach, you know, you should, I think, give them, it should be a good experience for them. But I usually, if the event doesn't feel very, very easy for them and almost boring, I would say I don't look to move up until it is. I'm probably a little, you know, I've developed the horses probably maybe a little slower than some people, but I genuinely believe that the foundation is really important. And if you get that part right, then going to the higher levels is not really such a big jump. So that'd be, it's more the homework that I would probably look at than just, you know, did they jump clear around their last event? I mean, that's a part of it, but it's really how they're handling all the training and everything that goes into getting them ready for maybe moving up.
I think that's a really interesting point, and I think something that we'll explore further, because if you're working at that level at home, then you do want to go into a competition and it feel easy, because the competition adds enough of an addition to it in itself. In terms of once you've stepped up and you've, you know, successfully stepped up a level, would you ever say, right, next time out, I'm actually going to drop back down a level and just give them that straightforward, easy run to rebuild the confidence again?
Sure. 100%. I think it all depends on the horse, but yeah, we do that quite a bit. And I love dropping them down, even horses with loads of experience. I think there's a big difference physically and what the demands are from an advanced level horse trial to an intermediate level horse trial. And I think even for the older ones that are really experienced, and you would think from like a challenge standpoint, they become quite good at jumping around in an advanced horse trial. You know, physically it's easier on them, and you can give them the same kind of puff and same little exercise without maybe being so hard on them physically, just drop them down and do an intermediate. So I think there's a place for doing that with horses at all levels, not just inexperienced ones that are moving up, but really experienced ones that kind of know their gig. And, you know, that's all part of the gamesmanship and the horsemanship. But I think, you know, you can think outside the box, and not every horse has to go and do 4 horse trials before they go to Kentucky. And, you know, I just think some of it's about knowing your animal and then kind of trusting that they're going to stay true to who they are when you go to the big event.
It's that word again, isn't it? Horsemanship. And I think we talk about it so often, and you know, we talk about what it means, and it runs through so many different threads. And this one is so important in so much as you're planning your season, but actually all of that revolves around your horse and what your horse is telling you at home, what your horse is telling you in competition, how you feel about it. And actually, therefore, the season does have to be a little bit fluid, because we want, as we're going to talk to Spike about a little bit later in the show, you want your horse to be competing with you for a very long time. And ultimately, you need to look after them, Will, to make that happen.
For sure. I mean, one of the first guys I trained with, show jumping rider, actually, and he said every horse has a certain number of jumps in it, so don't waste.
Very good advice.
Yeah. It's a little cliche, but it's probably true, you know. And you know, I think it's very difficult. I have the luxury of having a lot of experience with going 5 stars since I was 18 years old, and been on a lot of horses and jumped a lot of horses. And it's easier for me, I think, to pick and choose events and not over jump the horses, because I've got multiple, and it's harder, I think, for the guys that only have 1 or 2. And I can appreciate the pull between those two kind of motivating forces. Yeah, there's probably a balance there, and that's where I think having a good mentor, a good professional guide that can kind of give you sound advice and know your horses is a really important thing in the sport. It's such a hard game, and you need, I think, wise and experienced kind of misguidance sometimes. And so amazing that you can, I think, try to get a lot of input on from your coaches, but your even talking to your vets and people that are very invested in your program. I think that's all really important. That's something we do as well, is kind of try to feel like you pull the whole team together. And somebody might have some input that's really valuable that you might not be considering. So it should be a really holistic approach, I think, not just competitively what you need to do.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And it is a team effort at the end of the day, whether you have one horse, whether you have, a whole team around you. But actually, there are people that if you ask them for their opinion, for their help, actually, that can be really, really beneficial, because we're all guilty of when it's just us as an individual. I know I certainly find it, you know, it's very easy to convince yourself one way or another. I should do this because of X, Y, and Z. And actually, you haven't always thought about it from other angles. So very, very good advice. Will, before we let you go, can we just ask you for a couple of your top tips of people that are, whether they're an amateur rider or a professional rider, and they've got to the start of the season, they're looking to make their plans, what would your top bits of advice be?
Well, I think it's always, for one, I'd always work backwards from what your main goals are. If your main goals are just come established at a level, then I think come up with a way to do that you can maybe, whether it's staggering runs, moving up and down from, say, intermediate back to preliminary, or then maybe back up to intermediate. I think knowing the events and knowing which events are maybe going to be like a fuller expression of the level, or which events are going to be maybe a bit of a good starter at the level, is important. And then I think the timing, understanding kind of how your horse processes going to an event and competition and the stresses involved with that, whether they need more time between events or less. Really, it should be like a plan that kind of has a 6 to 8 month sort of trajectory. I think sometimes we can get really focused on feeling like we have to do so much early in the season, but I think that the season's really long in America, and I think make sure that you're leaving time between events where you can try to improve on things and make your horse more ready for the next time you go out. It's very difficult to do any serious training or improvements when you only have 2 or 3 weeks between events. And there's just not enough time there. You are training too hard in those short interims. I think it can be a little bit punishing on the horses. So all those things, you got to, that's why I think having good professional or, just sounding board can be really, really helpful. But for sure, take a long view. Sometimes becoming established at a level should take 12 to 15 to 24 months, not just 3 months.
Will, they are very, very good bits of advice. Thank you very, very much for coming on the show to talk to us, because it is obviously working for you. We're looking forward to following your progress in 2020. And I hope that our listeners will take some of those and be able to apply them to their own competition schedules as well. So thank you very much.
My pleasure, Nicole. See you soon.
Now, in terms of planning your season, there is obviously a really important aspect that we couldn't go through this episode without talking about, and that is the veterinary side of things. So Derm and I have collared our good friend from England, who is unbelievably experienced in professional event horses, running at the top level and at lower levels as well. So we will welcome you to the USEA official podcast, Spike the Vet. That's not actually your real name. Like, you're not called, well, you are Spike the Vet to me. But
No, I do have a real name, but it's a very closely guarded secret. So we'll keep going with Spike the Vet.
Spike, anybody that hasn't come across you before, just give us a bit of background on your experience, and obviously we're then going to pick your brains to give our listeners a bit of an insight as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, I've been working as a vet for 13 years now, and spent the last 10 years working primarily in eventing, sports horses as a whole, and a little bit of racing, but primarily in eventing. And I've been fortunate enough to work in some great places. I worked on the British World Class Pogen Potential Program for a number of years, and I'm now one of the vets for the Team GB Youth Program through BE, which I'm really passionate about, and supporting youth eventing and supporting and actually education and developing combinations is something that I'm really passionate about, and that really is what really gets me going, I suppose. But I've had horses under my care at every level, really, all the way up to the Olympic level. And yeah, I've been fortunate to be given opportunities, but I'm always a believer of taking them. At some point I met some Irish people and started doing a podcast. So yeah, delighted to be on it.
And the rest, they say, is history. Yeah. Let's break it down. So I kind of feel like we want to talk about the build up to an event, during an event, and then recovering from an event, and how you can make sure your horse gets through that process in as fit and as happy and healthy way as possible. So build up to the event. What are the key things that our listeners need to be looking out for, need to be taking into consideration from a veterinary perspective?
So preparation is key, isn't it? And there's lots of expressions that go along those lines. But I'm a big believer in having that degree of preparation, and that goes to being with your horse as well, and understanding what is normal for your horse, and understanding areas of strengths and weaknesses is key for planning where you are going to run and what suits your horse, and also planning when you're going to step up to the next level. And you can only do that when you've got a really strong team of advisors and support around you. So from my perspective as the vet, I see that as being able to advise on soundness, but also health status and other aspects, but also working closely with whether that be a physio, whether that be the farrier, whether that be the coach, and obviously the rider, about where the horse is at in their training and where they are at in their schedule. Are they finding what's being asked of them easy? What are they finding that's more challenging? What can we do to try and support that? And knowing that aspect of your horse is a key area for knowing where you are and where you then want to aim towards getting to. And I think with the work with the equi ratings guys and bringing in a higher level of analysis, I think asking those questions of yourself and asking those questions of your horse and asking that those questions of your support team is really important. So yeah, that it is benchmarking where you are is a really good starting point for in that sort of run up to the season, run up to the preparation for the first few events. And then you know, and then you can start analyzing where you're at after you start having those first results.
I find it really interesting, the knowing what is normal for your horse. So just talk us through that, because obviously every horse is different. What are the kinds of things that people can be doing? Should they be checking their horse's legs every day? Should they be monitoring how quickly they recover from certain bits of fast work? What would you sort of say are the most important things to really take note of?
Okay, well, it's a big subject there, but I'll give you a couple of examples. So let's say you have your horse has what's known in this in the UK as windgalls or wind puffs in the US, and for some horses having a little bit of joint distension, so wind puffs in their front fetlocks might be completely normal, left fore, right fore be equally normal, but in other horses where they're normally very very tight and there's no fluid in them, and one day there's a little bit in one, that can be abnormal. Whereas for other horses, it may be in the realms of normality for you. So it's knowing what those legs feel like. And that comes with running your hands down them every day, picking up on changes in heat, changes in swelling, and understanding that every horse is different. What you would expect from your 5-year-old is not what you would expect from your 15-year-old. And therefore, it's understanding what's different for the level of exercise that they're on. So that would be a good starting point there. The other thing would be fitness, how quickly they recover from the level of exercise you're asking them. And that can be something as simple as when they get their breathing back to normal. There's lots of fancy heart rate monitors out there, and they're a great tool to support you with that. But if you want to go simple, and I like to keep things as simple as possible, just timing how long it takes for the respiratory rate to drop from, well, up to 40, 50, if not 60 when they finished high exercise, but back down to a more normal level of under 20. And you can work that out very easily by whilst you're sat on the horse.
Spike, I think it's interesting to benchmark in, you know, how many times we talk about finding a measurable or find, like, it isn't, you know, some of the work equitings are doing in terms of, you know, you mentioned readiness and readiness for different levels. You know, certainly we've been associated with that from a from a risk management point of view, but just across the board generally. And, you know, we will have taken this from all aspects of life, not just sport, but also from a business point of view, is that very basic message on whatever you want to improve or manage, you have to measure. You know, the very nature of improvement means starting at a point and getting to a point. So like in relation to season planning, how we would look at it is the very first job when we talk to riders or owners about planning a season is, well, where are you now? And that can mean, you know, taking the kind of simple metrics, again, looking at it from a performance point of view rather than necessarily from a more holistic or veterinary side. We would look at it from a point of view of what is your 6-run average, for example, in dressage. And then once you've got a number like that, you can then begin to assess, okay, well, how does that impact, or is that where I expected it to be? And what is my target in terms of improving that? Taking something as simple as, you know, obviously Erkies exist and various other types of measurement like that. But even just looking at something as simple as how many times have I jumped clear in my last 10 runs? Like, is it 70%? Is it 60%? And, you know, but then beginning to assess is like, how good is that for this level? So like across the US, generally you'll generally see clear rates of kind of in between, I suppose, 70, yeah, probably in between like 75 and 80%, like beginner novice, 75%, novice, 80%. So if you're jumping clear like 60% of the time at beginner novice, and you're wondering about, should this season be the season to step up? Probably not. You know, it's probably you're trying to find a way that you're going to try and improve that clear rate in your last 10 runs before you step up. And this is all the kind of, okay, have a measurement and then improve it, or then at least manage it. And that's the same across veterinary. It's the same across performance. Like, go to the very top end of the performance. Spike, I don't know if you would agree, but certainly one of the things I find across the sport when we come to something like planning a season is how many times I sit down with riders and say, okay, well, what's the objective?
And I always think you have to work backwards from what the objective is. You know, there's no point.
I find people don't answer, Spike.
Oh, yes, I find that. But that's my first question if I'm looking at a horse. So what are we aiming for? So what are we looking at trying to achieve in the next 3 months, 6 months? And if they say there's no point there, if the actual aim is something in 9 months' time, and I'm trying to do a quick fix or a short term fix, there's absolutely no point in that. Or if they're saying that actually what I've got to do is if I don't run in this long two or long three that's in 10 weeks time, it ruins the rest of my season. Well, there's no point in me suggesting that they spend 6 weeks doing, you know, low conditioning work of strengthening their core, you know, their core. So you've got to have that communication. You've got to ask, what am I trying to achieve here?
But I couldn't agree more. I think that first piece, and I think too often, I think it's the easy route, which we allow ourselves, certainly Nicole, we would see it from a performance and a high performance point of view. I think too often we allow ourselves to say things like, my objective for the season is a few more podium finishes. That's usually the kind of area where people are. And then you begin to challenge people on that and you say, okay, well, a podium finish means finishing in the top three. So that's a placing. And to be honest, you can't really control a placing because it depends on how everybody else does. So if you're then going, okay, well, give me something that you can control, or like, what does that mean, a placing? Okay, well, let's say we're talking about training level. So actually what we should know is that training level, the average winning score in the US is 31. And the average score for someone in the top five or getting into the top five is 41.7. Okay, that's my starting point. I've got something to hold on to. And you can get these at every level of the sport. You say, okay, 41.7, I want to be in the top five at training level. Now let's take a look at my 6-run average. Well, actually I'm averaging 35, so I'm not really giving myself much room. But if I'm able to jump clear inside the time and show jump clear, I'm perfectly good on a 35 to be able to get my objective. But that works across every level. And for me, that's the kind of the data side of planning a season, understanding from the very first point of view how clearly you have to be able to say, here is what my objective for the season is. I want to start jumping clear in the cross country more often. I want to keep more show jumps up. Okay, how many show jumps am I keeping up at the moment? What is my percentage clear rate in my last 10 show jumping rounds? Okay, how many rails am I knocking? I'm breaking it down piece by piece until then you can say, okay, I want to go to preliminary. I want to finish in the top five in a preliminary. That's a 46.6 or below if we look at the averages. Okay, how do I get to a 46.6? But as Spike mentioned, from the veterinary side, objective, critical, and then benchmarking or having something to hold on to, some kind of measurement to hold on to, being the really critical ones for me.
Yeah, I think that's – sorry, Nicole, but I think it's interesting. You know, the question I get asked is when I say, what are you aiming for? That very rarely do people say, oh, I want to be in the top three or I want to be competitive or, you know, this side of it. They, apart, you know, the elite guys, the real pros want it, you know, definitely want it. But often you get told, I want to be at Blenheim 8 9-year-olds at the end of the year. So they're aiming, you know, they're taking their 8-year-old up a level. So it's then planning it based on the type of work that needs doing. And then you look at the horse and you go, well, this horse hasn't got a good enough canter yet to be able to be established in its changes. So that's what we need to work on. And if we're going to work on that, that's what we've got to work with the coach on. And that's what we've got to work with the physio on. And that's what, you know, the questions are asked of the vet on. So, you know, from their training point of view and where the horse is at versus necessarily what you're saying there about, you know, jumping clear more often and things like that, you know, a lot of that comes down to actually the groundwork. And again, there's no point me staring at a horse and saying, oh, I'm going to stare at its flexion test of its near four and hope to make that better. But it might be completely irrelevant to making the horse be a more competitive and more capable of doing the job that we want it to do. So it's putting all those pieces together. And as you say already, Dee, it's all about benchmarking and asking the right questions of the right people.
I think that's actually a really interesting point. So both from the veterinary perspective and sort of from the performance analysis perspective as well, actually take a step back. Think, what do you want to achieve? You're in the middle of planning your season. Do you want to just have fun? Do you want to move up to the next level? Do you want to jump double clears? Like, do you want to just come home with a smile on your face because, you know, your pony's had a lovely time and you've really enjoyed yourselves? Like, think about what you want to achieve. And then actually take a step back and say, right, okay, to achieve these goals, I need my horse to be this fit. I think I've been competing this well. And actually, by taking a step back and kind of looking at your last six dressage tests, you might be surprised by what you find, because it's not often that we actually will sit and study them. And also, likewise, in getting to know your horse at home, actually, those are things you spend hours and hours and hours with your horse. And they're the smallest of things that you can take notice of, that actually just think about them while you're doing them, because those little bits of planning, those little bits of detail will stand you in exceptionally good stead as you progress through your season and make your targets. You'll know exactly where it's going right, how things are changing. Are they too fit? Are they fit enough? All of those things that will become more and more obvious to you. In terms of travel, because obviously the US is exceptionally large, we're lucky in the UK of having a lot of events very close. And to be fair, we see a lot of people go and sort of base themselves in certain areas to take advantage of a lot of events that are going on over in certain sort of hubs, so to speak. What would be the key position from you in terms of, if you're preparing to travel your horse for a long distance, what can you do to make that as seamless as possible?
It's a good question. We're very lucky in the UK and in Europe as well. We have, I mean, we drive 4 or 5 hours to an event and think that's a long way. I can assure you that the US listeners are listening to this and going, 5 hours?
That's down the road, mate.
That is nothing.
Yeah,
especially
exactly,
if there's any, you know, even in the Australians as well. So, we could probably learn a thing or two from our cousins over in the US about what it is with traveling horses longer distances. That, for me, the key is hydration and trying to keep their routine as normal as possible. So drinking plenty, keeping some intake through forage and food. There's real challenges with feeding whilst you're traveling longer distances. I've worked with some youth teams traveling for 3 days over to Italy, for example, for junior and young rider championships, and getting a feeding regime and a forage regime and those sort of things correct, not only so that they're happy whilst traveling, but also that you don't risk horses tying up afterwards when you get there. So tying up is a condition where their muscles go into spasm, and it's called exertional rhabdomyolysis, and that can be brought on by reduced exercise, increased levels of feed, and therefore not managing them suitably at the other end. So that is definitely a challenge, and is one that you will find that horses will manage very well if given the opportunity to be prepared, and also to be able to recover at the other end. So longer distances, longer recovery time at the other end once you arrive at events, and also opportunities to rest whilst you're on the way. I tend to think anything more than 8 or 10 hours in a go is probably plenty enough. Ideally about 8 hours in the day before a rest and actual, you know, leg stretch off walking time in a stable as well would be great, but we don't always have that opportunity to have that. So it all comes under that sort of prior planning and working out your traveling, your stops, when you can get the horses off, and if they've got any other underlying conditions that might limit them, any airway problems, any respiratory challenges, and having to manage them appropriately. But it's getting that information. It's asking the right questions of your support team and asking the right questions of your vet about what you can do to reduce the risk of getting into any problems.
Okay, so Spike, you're at your event. You are fit. You are ready to run. You've traveled well. It is time for your competition. Now, in terms of making sure your horse comes through the competition well, obviously we could be talking about a whole variety of levels here. So it could be a lower level, a grassroots competition. It could be, you know, a 5-star long format that is obviously going to take a huge amount more effort from both horse rider and team around them. But just talk through generally the kind of the phases that you would go through at a short format of the competition. So a 1-day event, that sort of thing. And then we can kind of touch upon the long format and horse inspections and the like.
Yeah, I think for me, from a short format point of view, as vets, we rarely get involved unless there's a bit of a drama. But what I would say to people is that you do need to have a good old look at your horse and see what they have achieved and what they look like at the end of it. And there's definitely a little bit of a culture of, at times, if your horse accepting that the horse isn't quite right the following morning, or it might be a bit stiff for a couple of days. But unless you're asking the right questions and saying, why is that happening? Can I do anything better? What aspect of the last 3 days has gone well? What hasn't gone well? And what is it about my horse that needs to have a couple of days off afterwards? Now, that might be because it's an older horse and it's just feels the ground because you're eventing in July or August on quick ground. It may be that actually it's a young horse and it's the most it's ever had to do in 3 days that it ever has done before, and therefore it needs a bit of time to rest and recuperate. But generally speaking, they tend to give you a pretty good idea, and they tend to give you a pretty good guide to where they're at. So always analyze, always look, always make sure you're listening to what they're trying to say to you.
Can I ask you, obviously you give your horse a bit of a break after an event that, you know, it could just be a day off. It could be a bit of a leg stretch, those sorts of things. In terms of long format, what kind of things can you do to help make sure your horse comes out in best possible form to show jump? Because obviously they're fit, they're ready to run, they've been controlled for the dressage, hopefully anyway. They go cross country and then you're bringing them back out again the following day for a show jumping round. What sorts of things would you advise? Because obviously they need to rest. It's pretty tempting to give them a good leg stretch, but actually they need as much rest as possible as well to sleep and to recharge their batteries. So how do you balance those things?
Yeah, so that definitely is use that information you've gained from your 1 days. What does your horse look like the day after? Does it have to have a couple of days off at home? And if that's the case, then you need to work out what it is that's important that you do for that horse on the Saturday night, Sunday morning before trot up, and B, before hopefully show jumping clear. Whilst at an event, I think sometimes we can get distracted by lots and lots of detail rather than focusing on what's important. And what's really important is knowing what those legs feel like, what they look like, if anything has changed, making sure the horse is sound, making sure the horse is drinking. And one of the key things for me is, you know, rehydration after the exertion of a cross country, whatever level that may be. You know, rehydration orally, i.e. drinking, is definitely preferential to anything else. We'll see some horses at the higher levels requiring rehydration, whether that be intravenously or otherwise on a Saturday night. But I would always have a preference for allowing a horse the time to drink and rehydrate, by orally and therefore through their stomach and their intestines, because it's undoubtedly a preferential way for a horse to rehydrate. And I'm sure the internal medicine specialists out there would agree with me that is the best way of getting rehydration back in their system. And that's key. And it's working out how you get your horse to drink. And that can be training it with some flavored water, or whether that's just apple bobbing in the stable, or just some horses will happily have a nice drink afterwards. And making sure you keep an eye on them urinating, and urinating clear or nearly clear urine as well is very important, so you know that they're well hydrated. And that for me, it's those basics that are really key. But I do think it's understanding what is important. It's understanding about getting those things right, rather than necessarily thinking that it's the next miracle cure or something like that that's gonna get you through that Sunday morning trot up. And and as I say, it's taking that information from the one days of what's okay. And if you start going to the odd one day and they don't pull out right on that Monday morning out of the stable, you got to start asking the right questions of your vet. And annoyingly, some of those horses will be sound by Tuesday or Wednesday, but it's looking hard enough about finding what's causing that. That will make the 3 days go a lot smoother.
Can I ask you as well, because obviously, how they come out after a competition is very much going to depend, whether it's short format or long format, on the conditions in which they ran. You know, it could be very, very hard ground. It could be very, very soggy ground, bottomless. Which would actually take more out of your horse? I'm asking this for me, listeners, but hopefully you'll find it interesting too. I've always wondered, is it harder to run through a bog, or is it harder for them to run on top of the ground?
Well, based on the conditions that we've got in the UK at the moment, all they're doing is running in a bog or living in a bog, and the rain and the mud that we're dealing with at the moment. But
to get out of the bog, you have to go through a bog.
Yeah, it's pretty grim over here at the moment. But anyway, wet, I'm sure it's funnier times over in the wonderful US of A. The key is what horses are training on. So if they're training on potentially firm surface, or at least they're being turned out on firm grass, then actually they should compete pretty happily on it. You know, they are training and they're being prepared and they're being conditioned on that kind of condition, on that kind of surface. So I've always seen the biggest challenges when horses are exposed to a sudden change. So let's say, if I think back to Weg in Caen, it was the middle of the summer and everything's been around on firmer ground, and they go off to France and it's bottomless. And that suddenly is a challenge for them. And that's different muscles and that's different exertions. So yeah, it's tough on a wet and windy day, but it suits some horses. But it can equally be tough on other horses when you're, as we say here, on top of the ground, on good ground, where it's a bit quicker and there's a bit more rattle, and they might just feel their joints a little bit more. So it's, it's horses for courses, as they say. And also, if you know what your own horse's limitations are, you'll know whether it's going to suit that ground or not. And I think that comes into that season planning we've already mentioned, is the, what time of year are they going to be most suited to? We have, with our national hunt racing and over here in this country, there's definitely what we call good ground horses or soft ground horses. And I think that's applicable in eventing. And I think that's got to be taken into account when we're planning a season as well.
Yeah, I think that's really valid. And actually, it's one of the points that we've spoken to Will about as well, because, it is horses for courses, as you say. Some horses are going to suit a really, really hilly track. Others are going to prefer flat and twisty. Spike, I feel like we have only scratched the surface, because each of these topics that we're talking about, whether it be travel, post-recovery from an event, all of those things could be huge discussions in themselves. But hopefully, listeners, you've picked out a few little top tips to keep in mind when planning your season. And then we'll get the opportunity to look at them all in a little bit more detail as the year goes on. So if you've got any particular requests, then you know you can get in touch, podcast@useventing.com. Spike, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show and bring you over to the USEA official podcast.
It's been an absolute delight. Thank you very much. I feel as I've literally scratched the surface on many of these topics, but
I know it's almost a tease, isn't it?
Yeah. You are a tease, Nicole.
We will, I promise you, listeners, look at them all in a little bit more depth. But as I say, hopefully this gives you just a little insight into it. Derm, it's good to sort of get the perspective as well from how the stats can guide your season. And
Are you just saying that, Nicole?
No, I was going to say, ECHA ratings have actually, by the time this podcast goes out, will have released your simple metrics, which means listeners can actually refer back to them and get some top tips in the things that they can be reviewing. If you're not sure where you want to look at to analyze your performance, there's a really, really easy way of doing it.
Definitely, Nicole, one of the learnings for us in the last couple of years has been we have got to be able to get simple things into people's hands that they can use themselves. So when I mention things like 6RA or your clear rate in the last 10 in terms of jumping cross country or in terms of show jumping or stadium jumping, then you have got to, you've got to be able to do that. We can do things like your speed. So your OBP, of course, is one we mentioned, your opposition beaten percentage. So how many people you're finishing ahead of. So that'll all be coming out this week. And I would also say there is some quite good new articles coming out, I think, both through the USEA website and also through the magazine over the next couple of months, which break down each of these numbers, but also break down things like we're talking about today. So what are you aiming for? At what level? What kind of scores are they normally? Okay. Let's set a benchmark. And once we have that benchmark, the process of improvement can begin.
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting sort of point to actually just take a step back and look at it. And it's the ideal time to do it, start of the season. Clean slate, listeners, now is your chance. Derm, Spike, thank you both very, very much for coming on. Thank you to Will Coleman as well. It's been great to get his perspective and lots to look forward to on the USEA official podcast. Don't forget, you can get in touch. Find us on social media at US Eventing and send us any emails as well, podcast@useventing.com. A huge thank you, as we've had some really, really in-depth supportive emails from listeners with lots of different ideas, lots of suggestions, and they are all being looked at, and we will talk about them as time goes on as well. So yes, thank you very much. That is all we've got time for, though. So we will be back very soon with another episode of the USEA official podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.